Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
I'm Bianca Bremham.
And I'm Lara Chan Baker.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast from the Jackie Winter Group, which is a creative production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. What originally started as a business conference for artists and fellow creatives is now being turned around to shine a light on our clients. From art buyers and creative teams to fellow producers and managers, this podcast is all about offering a glimpse into the work we do as the bridge between clients and creatives. It's an ongoing exploration of how to wrangle the creative process to achieve excellence no matter what the medium. In today's episode, we wrap up 2017 and go around the horn to discuss some of our industry-related highlights and lowlights before heading to our secret underground lairs for a fortnight to do it all over again for another year. But before we retreat to our sterile modernist bunkers, how are y'all going today?
Super well. We just did our annual Kris Kringle celebration. It was super fun.
Oh my God. I think it was the best yet. If anyone is curious to see what 9 beard bubbles look like in my face, you can hop onto my Instagram.
I'm clearly the queen of gift giving.
That was pretty good. Pretty good. B, what about you? Is it a white Christmas in New York?
Look, I'm rooting for it. We had our first dump of snow over the weekend, and we're about to descend into 3 months of kind of depressingness, but there's definitely, it's charming the first time the snow falls. So I am looking forward to hopefully having a white Christmas. It'll be the first time ever.
Amazing. Well, let's jump in for the last time this year to go through some of the links from our...
Can you believe it?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. You're very excited. A two-week break is pretty good. It's hard putting a podcast together, but we're so proud of how everything's come out over the last 26 episodes. So, you know, almost a half a year. That's just... flew by.
It's pretty crazy.
First up is a link that I posted, and this is from probably one of my favorite websites in the world called Ask Metafilter. We'll be talking about in the new year someone who we met through another kind of obscure internet platform, Listserv. But Ask Metafilter is just a Q&A site where anyone could kind of ask questions and get random answers. And I always find things that I didn't even know that I was curious about. But this one came up, and this the question here was negotiations with bullies and other unreasonable people. And I really kind of, this kind of came up during a time where we were having some kind of trouble doing some negotiating.
Negotiations with bullies and other unreasonable people.
So yeah, we kind of, it was nice to kind of go through and see that, this is something that other people kind of go through, but also to get some amazing answers and resources from other people from different areas. There's a few links to books here that I had never kind of heard of, which things that will immediately go on a list for the next Jackie Winter book club, such as The Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense. And another book that is went immediately to my Audible queue, which was a book from a former hostage negotiator named Chris Voss, who wrote a book called Never Split the Difference, which is pretty amazing. I mean, we're not doing hostage negotiation or anything else as high stakes, but sometimes the emotion surrounding
The stakes are high.
The stakes are sometimes high. So yeah, I love that it also goes from kind of Never Split the Difference, this kind of hostage negotiating book, all the way down to The Broken Record Technique, which is it's something that parents can use on toddlers. So anything from terrorists to to small children,
same thing, really.
Yeah, pretty much. I will post a link to this kind of Q&A, and highly recommend.
Something on that note that came up, I think, in the Creative Mornings newsletter, which is another fantastic resource, which I think has come up almost every podcast episode. There was a really nice article, How to Control Your Emotions During a Difficult Conversation, which I guess is a little bit more like practical things like remembering to breathe and focusing on your body, which I really liked as just like a little reminder of how to actually physically get yourself into a place where you are in a better position to perhaps negotiate or deal with someone that's difficult.
Going off script there a bit, Bianca. I didn't have that in my list of links. Was that your link?
Going rogue.
Oh, yeah. I just thought I'd shake it up a bit. I don't know. It just came up. My link is actually something that Lara posted, which I really enjoyed, which is a blog called Farnham Street. I have no idea what Farnham Street is, but the article was called Maker versus Manager, How Your Schedule Can Make or Break You. And you posted this because it was interesting because it kind of was the first time that an article that you've read about time scheduling acknowledges reactive work. And, you know, like I think a lot of us kind of understand that most of the advice and writing that people give about time management focuses on being able to maybe block out larger chunks of time to focus on deep work and to get into the flow state. And, you know, we sort of are in this challenging position where the majority of the work that we do is reactive, and we are kind of responding to fires and urgent requests, and we kind of are wearing more of an administrative hat most of our work day as producers. But then there is times where, you know, we do need to, you know, the challenge of our role is there are times where we need to kind of switch and be focused. And yeah, this was interesting. It just kind of talked about the differences between a maker who's someone that might actually schedule long blocks of time to reserve to focus on a particular task, and then a manager who's someone that like oversees work and puts out fires and does more reactive work. And I guess that challenge is like, how do you successfully combine both of them into the workday, which I think we're all still trying to work out how to do. But yeah, some of the practical tips in there were just really to actually define your schedule and set boundaries and be empathetic to the schedule of others and try and really enforce that.
Awesome. And finally,
Lara?
Lara.
Oh, you're making a joke about the... I was like, seriously, Jeremy? I get it. He was making a joke because the third and final link we have today is a piece from The Atlantic, another one of our faves. And it is an interview from Julie Beck, who is a writer for them. She interviewed N.J. Enfield, who is a professor of linguistics at the University of Sydney. And he wrote this book called How We Talk, which examines how filler words like and hmm and sort of general pauses help to grease those wheels of conversation. And it's a really great interview looking at how these things act as sort of traffic signals to help guide communication. So obviously Jeremy's example didn't help guide the communication, but in the interview they point out that, you know, when one person asks another question, it takes an average of 200 milliseconds for them to respond. And that's so fast that we can't even hear the pause. In fact, it's actually faster than our brains actually work. So it takes the brain about half a second to retrieve the words to say something, which means that in conversation, one person is gearing up to speak before the other is even finished. So by listening to the tone and grammar and content of another's speech, we can predict when they'll be done and start crafting our response. Yeah, so we often talk on this show about the impact of certain word choices and tone, but this is just a really super interesting acknowledgement of that vital role that pauses play in conversation and how without them we'd actually be pretty confused. And we've talked about, you know, wanting to get rid of those fillers, but they play a really key part of conversation.
Unless you listen to podcasts at two times the speed and you get rid of all the pauses in between to just jam that content in.
I can't deal with you, Jeremy.
Okay. We will post the links to all these pieces and everything else we discuss in our show notes, which you can find at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. You can also get these emailed to you every Friday at our podcast-specific newsletter at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter. And I think we'll move on. So for me, 2017 was the year that I developed a Pavlovian auto-anxiety response to the New York Times push news alert on my phone. I really wish they would not use the same system to notify me that North Korea has launched a missile test with the same one that tells me that their annual gift guide is released, because it really messes me up. So while 2017 has seen its fair share of bullshit, to say the least, there are some pretty amazing things happening here as well, not to mention the fact that the advertising and design worlds continue to somehow exist and stay relevant and not get decimated by our AI overlords. So, to help celebrate the year that was and what's to come, we thought we'd check in with each other to go over everything from our favorite projects and pop culture obsessions here at the office, all the way to our predictions for the new year and Narcius anonymous comments. So, without further ado, I think we'll just kind of get stuck into the big question at the top, which is favorite campaign of the year. And I think this was a tough one, because I mean, we want to talk about our favorite Jackie Winter project as well, and pretty much all of my favorite campaigns we actually all worked on. So I tried to cast the net a bit more globally as well, which is kind of hard because obviously we're here in Australia, we don't get so many of the bigger campaigns. But at the same time, Australian agencies are some of the most awarded agencies in shows like The One Show and Con and things like that. So yeah, I'm really kind of curious to hear from you, B, what your favorite campaign was was, you know, being in the States for the last year. Is there anything that reached you that we might not have gotten here?
Oh, it's funny because my favorite campaign did reach you guys. Like, I really enjoyed, it was actually towards the end of last year, I really enjoyed Spotify's kind of wrap up.
That's my one.
I mean, that was the Spotify campaign where they actually used user data as the basis of their campaign to kind of craft all of their campaign material. I mean, that was on every subway car, that was, you know, in Times Square, that was kind of everywhere. And then they've redone it again this year. And I know that they've done like a local version in Australia, and it's, you know, it was so successful for them that like Netflix has copied it now. But I just really enjoyed that. I think it was the most interesting campaign that I've seen.
The copy was so well done. They put so much time and research into it. And it is kind of an extension of their 2016 campaign, but the local rollout was awesome. But on the flip side, I did absolutely have a favorite campaign because of how bad it was. That excruciating recruitment video from the Department of Finance.
Oh, those are
amazing. Does that count?
Look, I mean,
it was painful in the most amazing way.
Was this the one for Australia Post or a different one?
Oh, no, there were multiple, but this is a Department of Finance within the government. And my favorite part is where one worker offers another some paleo pear and banana bread, but then they have to turn it down because they're dashing off to an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander network meeting. It totally killed me, and I can't wait to watch it again after we finish recording.
I forgot about that. One that I wanted to touch on, like just more from a style perspective, that is only quite recent, like Chobani, the yogurt company, also a lifestyle brand, they rebranded recently. And just from like a style perspective, there was something about the kind of Norman Rockwell-esque look to the photography that to me felt just really nice and surprisingly refreshing, and I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, definitely a fantastic campaign.
Jeremy, what was yours?
Look, I mean, doing all these, like, I came up with so many different options, and I think it was so hard to just realize also, like, a year is a long time. And like, stuff that happened a while ago, like, I just completely have, you know, forgotten about. One thing I did notice was just kind of really kind of trying to go back over the year and figure out, like, oh my God, so much has actually happened. And I think, yeah, I kind of got this divided into kind of three different responses here. I think, first of all, the Fearless Girl campaign, the one that was done by McCann for State Street Global Advisors, where, you know, they placed the bronze statue of the girl in Wall Street opposite the bull. I thought, yeah, that was an amazing precursor to everything that ended up kind of happening, you know, this year with the whole Me Too movement. So, you know, obviously somewhat not related, but, you know, a bit of a oppression campaign in many ways. Moving on from there, I think in terms of a campaign for a whole client, I think KFC did some of the most amazing work this year, from, you know, globally to the shop that they did, you know, where they were
all the product work,
all the product
awesome.
Work yeah. that they were doing with jewelry, jumpers, you know, sculpture, just a great and just really done in a phenomenal way, tongue in cheek. That's not even to mention the TVCs that they were doing and how they were getting different actors to play the Colonel. Just loved it. And locally, the piece that Buck did here in Australia as well for Ogilvy, one of my favorite pieces of animation and motion. So, you know, they were kind of just working so well across the globe for KFC, you know, not to mention what they actually do or sell. It is quite delicious, but controversial. And also locally, this is another funny one for me, that I thought the new work that the Monkees did for Telstra, I was bawling. I don't know. I'm very sensitive at the moment, but like, that ad worked. I was watching Star Wars. They played the new campaign of like all families coming together with Telstra, like for Christmas. I'm like, it's...
Oh my God, this has to be like dad hormones, because I watch it and I'm just like... Switch next channel.
The use of music is phenomenal.
Well, I actually saw Star Wars last night, and the big brand that was being pushed in the advertising in the American cinema was Google Pixel, the new Google phone. And I quite enjoyed Google Pixel's really big brand campaign. I mean, it also looked like about $1 billion production.
Well, look, let's go a bit more local and talk about our favorite Jackie Winter project. This was really hard to choose from. I think, you know, we had such a phenomenal year, such amazing pieces across the board. There were definitely some kind of standouts. But Laura, I'm really curious to hear, you know, what was your favorite project and why? Oh,
this was really hard to narrow down. I mean, there are definitely a few that sort of immediately topped my list. There were a couple of Coke campaigns I had a lot of fun with. There was a few children's books that gave me a huge amount of joy. But I think I have to go with a pro bono project, actually, that I just wrapped up and we've been talking about a lot lately. This is the brilliant brainchild of Jess Lilly, who is the creative director at JWT Melbourne. So the Freedom Calendar was a project that we pulled together with her very quickly in an effort to raise money for the refugees detained on Manus Island after the very violent closure of the camps there. And without many other lines of communication, the men that were trapped there became incredibly active on Twitter, giving the world a pretty harrowing insight into what they were suffering through. So we decided to get 20 Australian artists to create artworks that directly responded to tweets from the detainees. And the calendar just came back from the printers the other day, and they're beautiful. And you should buy one, because all proceeds will be donated directly to the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, who have supported the project from the beginning. And, you know, almost everyone involved, myself included, donated their time and services. And for me, it was just a really, I guess, empowering example of how you can still find ways to help when your elected government are acting against everything that you believe in. And I think my favorite part was seeing the responses from the men when we showed them the artworks to get their permissions. It was just heartbreaking and heartwarming to see how touched they are that there are people here in Australia who support them. So yeah, I mean, a little plug, please, please do go to freedomcalendar.org to support the project. It's $25 for a calendar or less if you buy multiple. They make really good Christmas presents. They look incredible. And most importantly, it is a way that you can directly help to fight this horrendous situation. Sorry for chucking a plug in there in my answer, but it was one of my
this whole answer is a plug. And it also, I mean, and I want to give another plug to the amazing work that ASRC does, not only for their advocacy work and activism, but for their catering. They are amazing caterers, and we've been using them for a lot of the events that we've had.
It's
here
really good.
So yeah, this is this should be the most Melbourne thing of the week, but you know, if you're in Melbourne and you're looking for a caterer, hit up ASRC. They do some great stuff. Look, going on from that, Laura, yeah, I think that was one of my favorite things this year, that a lot of the social enterprise behind our work. This was one great example. Even the work that we did for Coke, which I thought was fantastic, which was, you know, this was a billboard that was initially in King's Cross that was just kind of, you know, say yes to the taste you love. And this happened before the horrible plebiscite for gay marriage, and how then, you know, it kind of was there during the vote as well. And we were able to then, the agency had the, you know, the idea, let's just modified to just kind of say yes to love. And that was a fantastic piece. And I definitely think
and a fantastic idea from Ogilvy Sydney.
Absolutely. So yeah, it was really great to kind of be part of that, as well as the work that we did for kind of Who Gives a Crap as well. That was fantastic. And also, what was for Oxfam, for the 40-hour famine, where we did kind of something similar
artists,
there. So yeah, some amazing social enterprise there. So yeah, we're really grateful to all of our clients and artists who came on board for that. B, what about you? What about from Jackie Winter, New York?
I mean, we had a really exciting year in editorial, but one of my favorite projects was having the pleasure to design the inaugural Fortune 500 cover with Fortune Morrow, which was really exciting. But my favorite project was more from a production point of view, because it kind of just lit my fire, and it was very fast turnaround and got the adrenaline moving. We got a call midweek, late in the afternoon, from one of the biggest tech companies in the world, who are kind of a bit of a bucket list client of mine, to turn around a 30-second animation from scratch for the following Monday. So it was really like 2 or 3 days of production, and we did it, and it was super exciting, and that was my favorite thing.
Awesome. Yes. A really amazing year for said bucket list client. Okay, moving on. Next question. What was our favorite new productivity tool or hack you implemented this year? And I think without a doubt, we need to give all the props to Airtable. I think this was something that, came up, and this is a very similar experience to Slack, where it kind of came up and I looked at it and was like, well, this is just kind of chat or group chat. Like when we first looked at Slack, and now it's like such an indispensable part of almost everyone's workflow. And I think I had the same experience with Airtable. I kind of looked at it as like, okay, this is just a spreadsheet, and I just kind of put it away. And then all of a sudden on one of my other Slacks, everybody else was kind of talking about it. And yeah, if we haven't talked about Airtable before, have we talked about Airtable here before?
I feel like we've talked about Airtable here before.
I mean, look, it's basically,
I don't think we've given it the amount of attention that we should.
No, I mean, it's something that you just kind of have to use to understand kind of how it works. It's one of these things that's very customizable for anyone's workflow. But basically, we have been keeping lots of stuff in kind of Google Docs, and especially spreadsheets. And the way Airtable actually kind of allows you to divide, filter, sort, and view information is really unique. And it's not something that you really talk about too much, something you just have to get in kind of experience, but they also, the way they market themselves as well,
yes,
in terms
I'm
of
obsessed with all their comms. It's incredible.
Their comms are amazing, but how they can say, okay, these are how other people kind of use what we do. And
I've never seen anyone tackle it in the way that they do. It's really phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. There's a new business that's kind of hot on their heels called Coda, which is aiming to do kind of something similar and kind of involve more than just kind of spreadsheets. And I do think there are some things in Airtable that do need some work, especially how they handle calculations in cells. But yeah, that was probably my number one tool for, you know, being more productive this year. Did you guys have anything else at all?
Oh yeah, far out for me. Hands down, which we've mentioned this before, has to be the Great Suspender. And Jeremy, I have you to thank for that. And yeah, as I said, we've mentioned it before, but the Great Suspender is this brilliant Chrome plugin for those of us like Jeremy and I who have 8 billion trillion tabs open at any one time. And it just basically suspends the running of the page without closing the tab. So it saves your RAM and helps your computer run smoothly. And then you just unsuspend the tab whenever you need it. It's simple and it's brilliant and it's changed my life.
It's amazing. B, what about you?
I mean, mine's a little bit more environmental. You know, here in New York, we share an office with a design studio who specialize in editorial design. Shout out to the wonderful people at Point 5 Design. And there is a huge contrast in the energy in the New York office here compared to our Melbourne headquarters, which is very much like a very loud, reactive kind of production office. Whereas here, you know, half of the staff are kind of very focused and working on editorial design, where there's, you know, sort of looking at a lot of like a lot of layout design, which takes a lot of kind of like care and attention and focus. So there's a certain calmness to the office here, which, to be honest, was quite jarring to me at first, but it has, I think, over the last over the last sort of 12 months that I have been here, it really has. I think I've brought a certain calmness and perspective to my own work because I'm not sort of surrounded by so much reactivity, which I think has been really nice in allowing me to kind of prioritize proactive and focused work over reactivity, which I've really enjoyed.
Amazing. Yes, very, very true. Let's talk about some an event that happened this year that we felt had the most significant impact on the industry or the potential to impact the industry. I think there's pretty much one thing that we've spoken about a lot here that we might all kind of have as the same thing. But let me see.
The Laura, management consultancies are coming. The rise of the management consultancies.
But yeah, it has to be the acquisitions, doesn't it, by consultancy firms. I mean, like Accenture buying the Monkeys, Deloitte Digital ransacking McCann, Russell Howcroft joining PwC, then them buying a stake in Thinkabell and so on. It's all anyone in the industry could talk about. And we've talked about it so much, I've honestly kind of stopped caring. I don't know what the effect's going to be, but it's like impossible to avoid the topic. And everyone seems to have an opinion on how it's going to either tear down or rebuild Adland. And I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we definitely kind of spoke about it a lot in our podcast episode, which you should go back and listen to. But yeah, every time there's like a reaction, it's been this kind of echo chamber of things happening. I think everyone's waiting to see kind of how it's all going to kind of shake out. I mean, I haven't seen any of these. It's really hard to kind of track the results of what these are doing because it happens so behind the scenes. You know, there's not like, you know, it's not like they're getting released on Campaign Brief or Ad News every day. So it'll be interesting to see what the results of these things are kind of next year. And I'm really hoping to keep an eye on it. Moving on from that, on some of the biggest trends of the year. Now, the thing that I kind of keep coming back to, I think number one, Bitmoji was my favorite trend of the year.
Is that this year?
That was another crazy thing. I kept looking up things and being like, oh my God, no, that was 2016.
Yeah, I found one thing that was, it was like 2011. I was like, shit, Laura, your timelines are way off.
Behind the times.
Yeah.
Look, whether or not, I mean, Bitmoji was definitely a big trend for me, just in terms of being able to communicate using myself as an avatar was, and still is, just cracks me up. I think some people don't have accurate Bitmojis, but mine is just so uncannily
You have a lot
similar.
Of like cartoony features.
Yes. Thank you.
no worries.
But I think the biggest visual trend for me was, I think, this whole kind of idea of weirdness. And I'll come back to this in terms of, I guess, trend forecasting. But it was a pretty weird year. Like, lots of surreal things are kind of happening. And I think that really kind of manifested in the kind of creative work that we were kind of seeing. One of my favorite accounts, If You High, on Instagram.
Oh, God, so good.
There's the stuff that I kind of keep seeing is a lot of this kind of really organic 3D work. A lot of kind of people setting up these kind of stages for these interesting kind of abstract machines to kind of make these things that are just kind of really satisfying to watch, but also kind of really strange. And a lot of the visual reference that we're getting and a lot of the art that we're seeing, I think a lot of kind of convergence of surrealism and fine art into illustration in a way that is still kind of creating work that is very commercially viable, but at the same time is definitely kind of weird, which I would
kind of. And it's also definitely an echo of people testing out these sort of more modern technologies and what they can do with them. And yeah, that's such a valid point. I hadn't thought about how weird it has been a year visually. I think on a totally different line of thinking, and I mean, you could argue that this was 2016, but I think perhaps in like a totally accessible mainstream kind of way, 2017 was really the year of the podcast. I loved seeing audio come back in such a big way, particularly because I take public transport and because I'm fascinated by creative storytelling. And I think although podcasts have been, huge for a while, 2017 really was the year that more traditional commercial advertisers jumped on the bandwagon, and also seeing more advertorial content, I guess, in the podcast realm. And every Tom, Dick and Harry has their own podcast now, or Jeremy, Lara, Hello. And Bianca. And then that got me to thinking about all sorts of different tech and blah, blah, blah. And another major trend, I think, has been not just the existence of, but like the forecasting of dystopian predictions for this sort of rise of artificial intelligence. Like everywhere I look, there's a long form article by someone with very sort of basic knowledge or experience in the subject, making an argument for why and how AI will or will not destroy humanity. And in amongst those, however, there have been some really fantastically, astute and valid assessments for both sides of the debate. And I'm really interested to see how things play out, but like, find new subject matter.
B, what about you?
I mean, I was just thinking more along the lines of like the kind of work that we have been commissioned to do and what's continuing to be commissioned. And I think in the style of Casper, which was, like a huge sort of brand launch from, maybe 2 years ago, I think tech brands especially are still continuing to like in that same style develop their own ownable illustration voices as part of like their style guides or their rebrands. And we've had a couple of instances come up where we've contributed to things like that, but Dropbox was probably the biggest example of that. They overhauled their brand pretty recently and illustration is a big part of it, and like an ownable illustration style. Yeah, and then again, like live illustration and just kind of like getting artists like in the flesh has still been something that has happened.
Yeah.
Anything to add, Jeremy?
I actually had three things for this because, it was really hard to narrow down to one. But I think in terms of trends in the new year, picking up on the kind of weirdness, I'm envisioning a lot of calmness, simplicity, humor, social engagement, lots of kind of responses to the weirdness and chaos of the last year. I think we're already kind of starting to see that.
Definitely. People are rebelling against the chaotic nature of life.
Absolutely. I think people want, and people, look to art of all forms to be a reflection of, where things are at, as well as kind of ambitions of where we want things to be. And I definitely think we could all use a bit of calmness and humor. But also, picking like brands genuinely realizing why social engagement and social activism is good branding and good corporate stewardship and citizenship. I think we are kind of seeing, a lot of this actually kind of now, go kind of flip the switch, from really staying in the not-for-profit community sector, going to a more corporate sector. So I'm looking forward to see how that emerges. I think other thing that we're going to see more of, really going to see more GIFs and short-form animation. I think that's nothing kind of obvious there, but if you're looking behind the scenes at a lot of the tech that is being kind of developed to support this content, WebM and WebP video formats that kind of Google's come up with that's baked into Chrome, which is kind of part of it, and other kind of things that that are happening in HTML5. I think the more this tech becomes more kind of mainstream, and there's things that are even more on the bleeding edge there, that's going to make short form animation and GIFs in particular much more pervasive. I think the final point I want to make that we were talking about this morning in our weekly catch up is about, I think more and more clients are going to kind of reverse or invert how they commission and develop campaigns. So I think the last 5 years we've seen, okay, we're going to start with a TV campaign. We're going to put all of our money there. And then we're just going to kind of, you know, put a few dollars here and there to social and everything else. And that's going to be kind of cut downs, or kind of, you're going to kind of bastardize the TV content to work online. We're kind of seeing things now go in reverse, where there's a more scattershot approach to developing lots of different social and short form content, seeing what sticks, and then growing the campaign from there to then for your cinema and broadcast and outdoor, things like that. So that's a real kind of challenging inversion in many ways, financially and kind of creatively, making that work. That's kind of my prediction in terms of how things are going to work there. Laura, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to think of things in terms of like visual aesthetic, you know, because I mean, we had already the year of craft, the year of chalk type, the year of the mural, and I was trying to figure out sort of what's next. And you've touched on some really good points there. I think with the sort of simplicity aesthetic, I think definitely we're going to see a lot of nonsensical sort of like VR, AR executions, like where it's not really needed. And I think people are starting to really try and figure out how to integrate those sorts of things into campaigns and into our lives in a way that feels natural and non-gimmicky. And I don't know if we'll achieve that. I'm sure some people will sometimes achieve it in 2018, but I think people will definitely be trying.
B, what does your crystal ball tell you?
Fozaics are coming.
Fozaics?
Yes. I know, we were talking about it in the office today. It's like typographic mosaic illustrations. And there's, I don't know, I think it's going to trend this year in the style of Nick Mazzani, who's a New York-based artist. But I can kind of see it, you know, like we've had chalk type, we've had blogger type. I think this is the next typographic trend.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of kind of pastels, chunky shapes, you know, a lot of kind of minimalism, this kind of like very Matisse-like illustration really becoming more relevant. Say it again. What's the word?
Like fake mosaic. Fozaic.
Fozaic. You heard it here first. Moving away from the industry, let's go to some of our favorite pop culture moments. And look, this one is too tough for me. Like a lot of my second child, my son, just turned one. So the last 12 months has been, you know, really kind of in the trenches there with my partner and our daughter as well. So a lot of pop culture has passed me by. But I mean, especially with Netflix, I think like so many kind of revivals, like a lot of this stuff that's just kind of really been red meat for kind of nostalgia fans like myself. And one of the things I'm looking forward to really over the next 2 weeks of break is trying to catch up on a lot of this. I don't think I even have a favorite pop culture moment, really. This is one thing I couldn't really kind of think of. I'm looking forward to seeing Blade Runner when it comes out. But like maybe someone who's actually been in the world for last year can fill me in.
Well, here. I don't know. 2017 has just felt like such a sprint. As we were saying, it's like hard to even remember what happened. And like I was trying to pick things this morning, and I was like, oh, what about that thing where Lenny Kravitz's dick popped out on stage? And that was like 2014. Anyway, and I ended up throwing this one out to my Facebook because I couldn't decide. And the winner, suggested by my wonderful mate Susie, was the Diddy Crop. Do you remember this?
The what?
So the Diddy Crop. Kylie Jenner posted a photo from the Met Gala of her and Kendall alongside Diddy, Wiz Khalifa, Migos, Travis Scott, and Jaden Smith. And then Diddy liked it so much that he reposted it, but he cropped Kendall and Kylie out of the picture, which is just kind of amazing. And it's sort of like, it's funny, but it's also this kind of commentary of these like sort of two white girls alongside this group of, you know, successful black men. It's pretty amazing. And then that reminded me of that photo of Diddy lounging on the stairs at the Met Gala. Do you remember this? Oh my God, you guys are just missing out on so much good stuff in life. But like also on a more serious note, like, I mean, the Me Too movement, of course, has been a really fascinating and depressing and eye-opening development, you know, in this sort of continuing shift towards honesty about, you know, the consistent sexual abuse that females face across all ages and nations and industries. And so that's been a really beautifully depressing pop culture moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's been two weeks, there's been two kind of like high profile advertising sort of creative director MD sort of types that have either been removed from agencies or voluntarily resigned because of alleged sexual harassment claims. So I think, yeah, it's interesting that it's like keeping the industry accountable.
Speaking of which, B, what's your pop culture moment of the last year, speaking as someone who is like 10 years behind in all pop culture?
I think my favorite was that really tone deaf, I mean, speaking of the Kardashians, the really tone deaf Kendall Jenner Pepsi commercial, and just sort of, I mean, yeah, that was just, that just really stuck out as being quite awful in the sort of sea of whatever it is that we've been going through.
Yeah, that's what I always keep racking myself. Like, it must have gone through so many different people, at like so many different teams, so many levels of approval, and like, who the hell was in those rooms that didn't put their hands up and say like, I don't know about this one.
Yeah. Well, we can go to our favorite industry controversy towards the end to dip back into that maybe. But before that, our favorite new artist discovery. And yeah, this is, I guess, you know, outside of the illustration animation worlds that we dip into. I think this was kind of very prescient for me at the moment because I'm looking at kind of purchasing some artwork for my new house. And the artist I've been obsessed with for the last 6 months is a photographer named Tom Blatchford. And Tom has done a series called Midnight Modern, where he's gone to Palm Springs and taken these insanely gorgeous long exposure photos of some of the amazing modernist homes over there.
Wow, I just Googled him. His work is amazing.
It's incredible. So it has a lot of similarities to Gregory Crutzen, who's a photographer who does kind of these very elaborate kind of set pieces, but this is kind of without the people, but a very kind of similar vibe. It's very kind of dark, but also like incredibly surreal. It feels like all these places are on another planet and not in California. So I've been loving Tom's work. Can't say enough good things about it, but it's also a time I've just been dipping into lots of other disciplines. You know, getting our Risso off the ground here. I've been looking at a lot of different Risograph studios across the world, such as Issue Press and Resolve Studio. But yeah, really getting into Australian architecture as well, especially the work of Austin Maynard Architects, who are doing, I think, some best work in the country and in the world right now. So especially with their work with the Nightingale Project, and they just announced kind of Nightingale Precinct, which is bringing around like 8 or 9 different architects kind of working across this new model for housing. So yeah, really, I mean, these are not kind of new discoveries, but definitely kind of my obsessions for the last year. Bea, you're always Instagramming me your kind of crushes of the week. Who did you have in your list?
I mean, I think I just have like such a specific taste in art that my whole year has just been really just like seeking out the thing that I love looking at and being in amongst, which is like really minimalist American contemporary art. And I toured, like, I had a nice tour of the Judd Foundation earlier in the year, and now I really want to go to Martha. And you know, I saw another James Turrell, like the 100th James Turrell retrospective that I've seen in my life at Massmoka. And but I think my favorite kind of like new artist discovery, which wasn't really new and it doesn't look any different from like the kind of art that I'm really into, which is like minimalist art that like has a lot of space and like gives me a lot of room to kind of, I don't know, breathe and like meditate and think about things, was there was a John McCracken show at David Swerner, who's a sculpture based artist. And yeah, I don't know, I'm so boring. Like all I am obsessed with is art that has a lot of room to breathe.
Laura, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I as well sort of went on a bit of a different slant here. I think you guys know that I have an earring problem. And so my favorite artist discoveries this year have just all been independent jewelry makers. One of them was AM Assembly, which is this sort of small venture based out of Tassie from Ainsley Macaulay. Her work is just like really unique and inspired by the landscape, which is so beautiful in Tassie. And the other is Concrete Jellyfish Co., which is a Brisbane based like resin jewelry design studio. And again, their works are just massively inspired by Australian flora and fauna, and everything they make is a piece of art and wearable art, which I love. And I'm just totally obsessed with their stuff. In particular, they have this series of earrings where each is inspired by a different Australian river, and they're absolutely stunning.
That's awesome. Yeah, some really good stuff there. Again, we're going to be putting all the links to all of these artist discoveries and everything in our show notes. It'll be a pretty big one this week, so got you covered there. Favorite industry-related event you attended? I think for me, it's been, I don't want to kind of turn this into a bit of a plug fest, but I think my favorite events are the ones that we've kind of put on. So, you know, from Open Tabs, the event that we kind of went into agencies kind of with different creatives outside of our network to show what's in our browser tabs, Looking Glass, the life drawing, digital life drawing we've done on Apple iPads and with Creative Mornings as well. So, I mean, that's one of my favorite things about this is, you know, making events for people to kind of come to, and also seeing people kind of really engage to it. So yeah, those were really, you know, I attended them, but also kind of led them. So yeah, those were definitely my favorites because I also hate going out and talking to people. So.
Well, like it's a weird time of year to ask this question because like all the fun events happen like at the end of the year. So like, I can't remember the ones that happened at the start of this year or whatever. And we're about to go into all the new ones, but I like, is it okay to say that my favorite industry related event was our own 10 year anniversary party?
Please go for it.
Cause it was such a milestone for us, and to be able to celebrate it alongside, you know, so many people that have contributed towards Jackie Winter and the Australian creative industry was just like really special. And if I have to pick something that's not us, I just remembered this now, but we got tickets to the like Night at the Museum thing, which is not really industry related, but we were invited because we're in the industry, I guess, where they opened up the Melbourne Museum at night and they had like amazing bands and there were no children. It was so good. And there was alcohol. And yeah, I loved it. I got to hold a shark.
One thing that I didn't go to myself, but we were kind of tangentially involved in, was the Rare event in Sydney, which we spoke about on the podcast previously, in terms of, you know, really kind of supporting female and minority creatives. And also, yes, yeah, Sample Brew was involved with it and brewed a beer based on kind of stats of these kind of figures as well. So yeah, that was a great event with a great kind of concept behind it that I was very interested in. B, what about you? You are a bit of a mover and shaker in New York. What was your favorite event?
I mean, the thing I love about New York is that there is always something happening. And I think, I've been to a lot of like really great talks just put on by creative agencies or magazines. Like I went to one the other night, The Great Discontent Live, which was really interesting. But Chandelier Creative, who are advertising agency here, do almost like, I don't know how they keep it up, but they do monthly kind of, they do a monthly lecture series. And yeah, I mean, some of the ones that I went to this year, which were just really fascinating, like 45 minutes of someone interesting talking. Michael Beirut of Pentagram talked about kind of like the politics of branding, and the architecture firm Family, which I really enjoyed. And then this fascinating keynote, which I just can't stop thinking about, from this creative director and designer Sally Thura. I don't actually know where she works, but it was on the politics of contouring versus strobing. So the makeup applications, and yeah, I mean they've just put on some of the most fascinating events, and they're free and they're just like easy to get to, and I've just loved it.
Amazing. Okay, we're kind of rounding the corner with the last three questions, and I think we're starting with our favorite campaign brief comment. If for those of you who are overseas, Campaign Brief is a industry online blog where they go over the most recently released news and campaigns in the Australian and I think New Zealand and Asia as well. It is also a breeding ground for just dangerously horrible comments because they're all anonymous. Even though it's moderated, it's kind of one thing that I love kind of reading because, look, I mean, usually the comments are, it's not like that soul destroying where it's like pages and pages of people just kind of piling on. It's just like a few really kind of well worded. And because they're people who are in advertising writing the comments,
yeah,
they're usually
it's
very
just
good.
Very snarky. I love it. So even just the names they use, like the pseudonyms they come up with, are so good.
So anyone who could find any of the anonymous comments that I've written, I've only written a handful, but if you can guess what they are, I'll give you $100 to anyone. I'm throwing the gauntlet down. But there was one post that had some great comments in particular. This is just to give people an example of kind of what a typical good snarky response is. It's completely hyperbolic and over the top. The comment is not really, full stop. This is idiotic to the core, full stop. Dangerously stupid, full stop. Creatively blind, full stop. An insult to humanity, full stop. A sad day for culture, full stop. And it's all in one sentence. It really kind of captured all the angst there.
Market of people who take advertising so seriously.
I think my favorite comment there, and like I think the best comment that was kind of put there all year, was "What a fantastic ad for convincing marketers to use an ad agency," which I think is just really yes. great because it's just kind of it's like, and you know, look, it's a great way to get kind of feedback kind of on your work. And this was in response to a piece that was kind of done in-house through a kind of creative competition, which is something that I have very strong feelings about. So yeah, I think if anything to take away from
was
this,
was that your comment?
No, that was not my comment. Laura, did anything come to mind? There's there are literally thousands of posts to go through.
I have seen so many good ones, and I was kind of frustrated because I couldn't go back and find them, and it was very difficult. So instead, I just wanted to, I know it's like slightly off track, but I wanted to just highlight the best thing that happened all year, which was the New York Times comment. Do you remember this?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so Chris, I know, right? Christine McMorrow, who's this New York Times reader, and she's a very prolific commenter. She was trying to write a comment on a story about the Republican Party's relationship with President Trump. And she was using like a voice to text
I love this so much.
Function. And so this is the comment she wrote. Zero optimism that the Democrats can ever again. Hello. Hi. Oh, you're there. Are you outside? Oh, well, let me come to the door. I'm icing my knee and I'm hardballing some eggs. I'll turn them off and then we'll do our meeting. Yeah, that will be fine. I'm Norman's out doing some errands. And it goes on and on and on. And it actually posted, and the New York Times named it their comment of the year.
That, yeah. There's also the Donald Trump one where he like didn't finish it, where it's just kind of not Kafefi, but easy D.
Oh, God.
Anyway, God. B, what about you? Anything come to mind?
No,
there?
I stopped reading. I don't need that negativity in my life.
Fair enough. We'll move on from there to the favorite industry. Well, not favorite, but I guess the
most interesting, most industry, interesting controversy. Industry
controversy. And the one that really kind of stands out to me is what happened with Apparition Media in Sydney. And look, Apparition, you know, lots of respect and lots of time for what those guys are doing. I'm effectively kind of doing hand-painted billboards and art pieces, you know, in Melbourne, Sydney, other places in Australia. But something happened a few months ago where they painted an ad for the movie Mother over a piece in, I think, Newtown, which was a community piece, apparently kind of without permission from the council. It caused a pile on of kind of comments. And like, look, you know, I do think the way Apparition kind of handled it was great. Obviously you can't satisfy everyone, but some people were out for blood, and you know, they kind of rode that storm, you know, just kind of engaged where they could, didn't engage with where they didn't need to. And I thought, look, it opened up some really great kind of dialogue about, you know, how commercial art exists in public spaces, and, you know, the what function advertising serves, and how, you know, we can support artists who actually, you know, create this kind of work and actually kind of paint it as well. I think, you know, there's a lot of kind of honest work that people do in advertising and getting it out there. And I think, you know, it's unfortunate this had to be the, I guess, the impetus to having these discussions, but it's good when, you know, they are kind of productive and make you kind of think about it. And I definitely think, you know, there was a net kind of positive result overall from it. But yeah, it was definitely a controversy that I paid a lot of close attention to. And look, I think really the last thing is to talk about the song album that had the most airplay in the office. Now, this was pretty easy to do because, well, we're on Sonos. We have a million Sonos accounts, a million different kind of things connected, but there is a Jackie Winter Office kind of specific account. So I went through and I did the year review on
we
Spotify.
We almost always use my account though on our Spotify.
Well, see, I got different results. The results that first of all, like, I just want to say, like, yeah, it's been a big headphone year for me as well. So it's not like, you know,
you're in an office with like 10 under 30 females.
This is true.
We have
this
different
is
music
true.
Tastes.
But yeah, what Spotify spat out for me was we listened to 100,000 minutes on the JW Office account, and our most played song was by, you see, this is again proving my age. I don't even know how to pronounce the name of this band. Weighs Blood, W-E-Y-E-S.
I don't know who the hell that is.
I don't know. The song was called Diary. That was our most played song from the Office account. What
I
did you
no
get?
Idea who that is. Well, I only know because I'm office DJ a lot of the time, and it's often on my account. And I know that I played Calvin Harris's Feels on repeat for like 4 straight weeks. And also consistently for the last, you know, however long I've been here, 3.5, 4 years, I have managed to play Anastasia's I'm Out of Love at least once a week. Because it's the best song ever written.
Oh boy. B, what about you? What's been going in New York?
You only ever listen to one song at a time.
I actually did listen. My music taste is terrible. Our office is like, it's a little bit more chill. So I have this one go-to playlist that my friend Dom made that I throw on every now and again, which is really nice and chill music to put on in the background. But in my headphones, I listen to a lot of Royal Headache, a lot of The Strokes, a lot of Boom Gates. Shout out to Steph Hughes, one of our artists. And a lot of just thrashy music, because that's the only thing that I can.
The only way to get through 2017. And, what a crazy year.
Yes, on that note, I think we'll wrap up. I think there's a really solid overview over there. Again, thank you to everybody for listening, people who have written in with their feedback on and correcting us on blagging. If you told someone else, if you've rated the podcast, anything, it's been so much fun to do.
I want to say very quickly, I had a check before the show, and we have now officially been listened to by people in 60 different countries, including Vietnam, Israel, Fiji, and Nigeria, and that is bonkers. Thank you.
I would like to also thank the Russian bots who have made all those fake analytics for us to make us feel like we're doing a good job. No. Yes. Thank you to all of our peoples all over the world. So with that, I think we will sign out, but not without the most Melbourne or most New York thing of the week or the year. For me, it's a bit of a sad one, the most Melbourne thing, because I don't know if it's the most Melbourne thing, but we got burgled, which is
we've been, it's a Collingwood thing.
It's a Collingwood thing, definitely. Like the first time like it's ever happened in kind of 10 years. And so, you know, I think if one thing it has kind of provided a real kind of outlet for everyone's, you know, law and order fantasies.
Like,
everyone
has a theory.
Yeah, there are lots of different theories about. There is lots of surveillance footage being kind of. there's lots of kind of everyone's kind of questioning each other. Like, was it an inside job? Like, I don't know.
Jess. She left for Sydney the next day. It's Jess,
and then she came back the day after, which was crazy.
Cover.
I know. So anyway, as much as it does suck to get burgled, if you kind of see anything, that was probably from our office. let us know. Laura, what about a more positive note? Anything, what's your most Melbourne event?
Man, this is almost too good to be true. But Dan and I were driving somewhere the other day, probably to Bunnings, because apparently we live there now. But anyway, these two cars pulled ahead of us in the right lane. And I was already laughing when I saw the first one, because it was this like bright yellow doof hoon car. And the number plate was sick in capital letters. But then another car came up directly behind it. It was the same model, but in this like retina burning, like purple color. And its number plate was bruh, like BRUH in capitals as well. Yeah. So they just drive around together, making sure that purple always stays behind yellow so that they read sick bruh to anyone behind them. I just thought it was so good and so Melbourne.
Love it.
So Western Melbourne.
Bianca, take us home. Give us something good.
I mean, I wasn't going to talk about this, but talking about being burgled, my debit card got hijacked. And since moving to New York, it's happened 3 times. But the most recent time, I kind of worked out that whoever hijacked it and was just going on a bit of an online shopping spree is obviously a meathead, because one of the things that they signed up for was a weekly meal subscription service for like this paleo meal. So that it freaked me out, because I'd already gone through this whole process of like speaking to the bank and being like, these aren't my transactions, blah blah blah. And then a week later, this like meal turned up, because I don't know, I don't quite know how it's kind of come to me, but somehow they've got like, you know, like my, I don't know, my details. But anyway,
I still think you're doing it though, like in the future, you're sleepwalking.
Sleepwalking. Like that. I don't know. The most New York thing, it has been snowing recently. New York in the Christmas time, like in the festive season, is one of the most romantic times of the year. And yeah, I had a friend staying with me, one of my oldest and dearest friends staying with me over the last week, which was really lovely. You know, she got to see snow for the very first time. And we went ice skating in Bryant Park, which was just so beautiful. And I just bloody love it at this time.
Amazing. Well, look, thank you. Enjoy your Christmas, B. And we will talk again the new year.
Thank you. I'll also enjoy my Christmas journey.
Yeah, come on, Laura. I was getting to you. Go. This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Arij Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. at Jackie Winter. That's Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. You can also sign up to our weekly podcast-specific newsletter, where we will be sending you all the show notes and links discussed in this episode and every other episode when our episodes drop on Friday. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/JackieWinter. If you love what you hear and love what we've done for the last 6 or so months, you could really help us out by subscribing on iTunes. Rate us, comment on us. The more people that we know listen to this, the more that we enjoy doing it, because we are obsessive egomaniacs. Well, I am, but it's good to know who's listening. Details are on our website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thanks for listening. We are on break for 2 weeks, so we will see you in the beginning of January. Thank you again. Have a happy holiday and new year. Bye-bye. 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 Bye.